Les, for giving an introduction, actually. That saves me quite a bit of time, which I probably need, because usually I need about 45 minutes and have to squeeze this in 15. So, great. The focus, like Steve was saying, is on the subsurface. So we'll have the context of the surface hydrology, and so we're going to now focus on the subsurface. And actually, we're going to look at historical context of that as well. We're going to go back at the onset of irrigation, pretty much, and when major irrigation practices started in the 40s. And now we move on, and if I have some time, I will talk a little bit about the future. I would like to dedicate this talk, actually, to he's written right there, Ken Tanji. Many of you will know, he passed away about 6-7 weeks ago, and he actually was very instrumental in some of the salinity issues that we incorporated in this modeling approach. So I can skip this slide, we all know about it. What's surprising though is that, and for those that are do not live in California, surprising to know that most of the irrigation actually still is surface irrigation, is gravity irrigation, despite that we have all these incredible technologies, which we use as well, but still a lot is surface irrigation. So the focus of the area is in highlighted here. It's part of Westlands. It's actually part of the Western San Joaquin Valley, and to a large extent, it includes Westlands Water District. The objective of the study is to actually develop what we call a hydrosalinity model, capable of predicting long-term and large-scale impact of water loss management decisions. We calibrated this at a large scale. We use a lot of information that was collected in the past 20, 30 years or so on groundwater levels and groundwater pumping. And then the modeling exercise, what we're going to do is I'm going to show you to reconstruct the hydrology of the valley, or at least a representative area of the valley, and looking at groundwater levels, soil and groundwater salinity. And then, like I said, and there's no time really to really spend a lot on it, but we have been working on climate change and looking in the next 100 years and see how that will impact the hydrology. So the area that we're looking at is over here, for those of you familiar with the hydrology valley, it's USGS about 15 years ago published this key paper looking at the hydrology at the time. And so this is the area, it's about 1,400 square kilometer and includes 13 water districts. Okay, water districts are the entities by which irrigation water is managed as well as drainage. And so you see the California aqueduct, as pointed out earlier, moving the water from up north to the valley, to the San Joaquin Valley. So a bit of hydrogeology. So what we're going to look at, actually, the model itself will be a three-dimensional model. So we're looking at basically a bathtub, and this is what this is trying to show here. So this is the coastal range. This is the Sierras. So this is and we're looking here in depth to what we call the Corcoran clay, which is really kind of the impermeable layer that defines the bottom of the tub. And so the region that we're going to simulate is something like this, a 3D region. This shows the topography, the San Joaquin River over here, Fresno over here. So it's the western side. And so going up to the coastal range, about 400 or 500 feet. Looking at irrigation, and this is what this slide is intended to do, is starting, like I said, in the 1940s, irrigation was mostly by groundwater pumping. That's the blue line. And this on the vertical axis, we have the irrigation water applied, expressed in depth of water, okay, meters. So, and that's on the average over the whole region. And so, early on, all irrigation by groundwater pumping, then the state and the federal projects developed, and you see reverse, and then farmers starting to use surface water, of course, groundwater going down. And so you see this timeline over here, and for those of you that have been living in California, we know all about the droughts. And so these are these two valleys over here, or peaks in terms of blue, when surface water was much less available. And so it's at that time that the farmers used their existing wells and started pumping groundwater again. When we calibrate the model, we use this thin 15-year period, where in fact that included one of these droughts. Just to show that we actually do modeling over here, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, obviously, but this is the flow equations that we solve in 3D. The partial differential equations are very difficult to solve, but that's what we're actually doing over here, and it couples the unsaturated zone with the groundwater. In terms of characterizing, dividing up the region. We do that in called grids. And the horizontal grid size is the size of what a typical field will be, so half by half mile. And vertical, we just discrete the size and we divide the system in layers that are vary from just 30, 40 centimeter to 10 meters or larger layers. And then there's the semi-confined aquifer, which is below, which is above the rock and clay. Just to show what the data what we have, this is all texture maps, so this is all included in terms to characterize the hydrology, the conductivity, and so on. This shows a typical crop map that we use, and each year there will be different crop maps. So this is all information that is included in the model, because of course each field though has its own irrigation requirements and so on. So that's all included into the model. The bottom curve over here shows the irrigated area as it has evolved over time. Groundwater over here, when surface water became available, basically the whole area was irrigated. There's a calibration, like I said, we had a lot of information available. We had drain data for Broadview Water District, which is one of these water districts that was impacted in the 90s with selenium and salinity. Westlands Water District, there's a lot of wells that we had data available as well, including groundwater tables. So that's all. This all is information that went into the calibration. We then, in terms of the calibration, we get the various parameters, and actually you can imagine quite a few of them that then control the hydrology subsurface in the subsurface. And we use that then to simulate 60 years of hydrology and soil and shallow groundwater salinity. And so I'm going to show you some results of that. So here you see a timeline of observed versus simulated groundwater table. So here we're only looking at the hydrology, and you see this, the red is deep water table. Remember, this is the coastal range. Going down in time, then you see that water table starting to move up and up and up, which is very typical, of course, in irrigated regions, as farmers apply more water than is actually used by the crop. And the model then is able to simulate that, and that's over here on the bottom. You notice though there's a lot more randomness, and that's because the model includes grids, whereas the observations, we use interpolation to get a map. This is the graph that I showed before, showing in terms of how much groundwater pumping is used. The crosses are the observations over the 60-year period. After we calibrate the model and we start in 1940, we start simulating the groundwater pumping, it's the blue line that we get. So this is just to show indeed that we were able to capture some of the essential hydrologic elements of the region, particularly looking at these peaks corresponding with the droughts. Now if you look at then that valley, that region in 3D, you can look at this as a water curve. So filled with water, and what we're showing here in this graph over here is the water volume in million cubic meters over the 60 years for these different components: infiltration, crop water use, and on the right hand side, drainage, pumping, and bottom and lateral fluxes. Okay, so the units here are million cubic meters. So this is cumulative for this whole region. And so, for example, what you see over here, the red line over here is the seepage through the Cochrane clay, which is going to carry the salt to the ground, to the deeper groundwater. And the blue line over here is the lateral flow. So when you look at the shallow groundwater, the hydrology shows there is a gradient, and depending on whether it's groundwater pumping or not, which is what is shown in the blue on the left over here, initially it's mostly groundwater pumping, and so the regional groundwater was going westwards towards the ocean, whereas when groundwater stopped and there was more surface water application, the direction reversed and went towards the San Joaquin River. So it goes below zero. All right, in terms of salinity, so we then couple the salinity with the hydrology, and we use a model called INSET-CAM. And rather than looking at salinity in the broad views, we look at each of the specific ions and look at the transport of each individual ions as they move through the system. Particularly, this was important as we realized later, this area has a lot of gypsum and calcite, and so as we found out, as I show you, it's the dissolution and the precipitation of the gypsum that's really one of the main causes for the salinity in the groundwater. what we usually think is that it's caked with the surface water, and of course a part of it that's true, but a lot of the salinity, the subsurface salinity is triggered by the, in this case of the dissolution of precipitation of the gypsum. So like I said, it is important because of that, and as a result, the chemistry of the groundwater is largely controlled by these precipitates and its dissolution as well. So again, we have all that information. So this is what this slide is showing. So we need to know the clays. We need to know the carbon, the gypsum content. We need to know the cation exchange capacity and all that. That all goes into that chemical transport equation to then solve and eventually for the salinity. And that's what, you know, in summary is what one of these slides is showing. Again, let's just focus on one slide over here. This shows now the total salt load in millions of tons per year. Okay, so look at the salt shaker. So this is the salt that moves through the system over these 60 years. And so, for example, let's look at the bottom flux, is the green line. So this is the flux that moves into the deeper groundwater, okay, through the Cochrane clay. And this has, of course, changed because, again, initially there was a lot more pumping, and that has decreased as more surface water was applied. This shows this little cartoon, actually, again, of the results. It shows how increased the high salinity initially, by the way, which I didn't mention early on. The region was highly saline before irrigation started, because basically there's just a lot of geologic salinity, and that's in red. And then you see with the irrigation, the salinity decreased and then started to increase again in the last decades, and that's because of those shallow water tables moving salts towards the soil, shallow soils. The same for the shallow groundwater, and this of course is what we're mostly concerned with, is the deep groundwater increasing in salinity. We then compared the salinity with salt survey maps that also provided salt salinity information. This slide here, for example, shows the trends in salt salinity with time as compared with data points, and again, they were corresponded very well. On the right-hand side here, the cumulative storage of salt in millions of tons in this region as a function of time, you'll see that there is some stabilization in terms of total salinity. But if you look in terms of the dissolved salts, which is what this line is, there's a continuous increase in salinity, and that's mostly because of the dissolution of gypsum. So a summary slide over here, which basically summarizes what I already told you. The main point was that when we're looking at a salt balance in this type of situation, it appeared that the gypsum and the calcite was extremely important. If you want to know what's happening in terms of the salt balance, you have to consider this. And this is actually representative for many alluvial systems in the world which are irrigated. So like I said, just 2-3 slides and then I'm done. So with that, we then took 2000 as time zero and we looked at the next 100 years. We used climate change models, as we all are familiar with. PCM had these global models. We downscaled those to California, and then we used the temperature, precipitation, and so data to predict the climate and the water requirements for the crops in the valley. And then we simulated that for 100 years, and we're then looking at all these the same components of hydrology and salinity, as I just talked about. And again, I don't have time at all to go into detail. This is a summary slide. This shows, again, you can look at this as the fraction of the region that I talked about as salt affected. And this went down and then went up again in 2000. And now we're seeing here a downward trend for all these different scenarios. So, you know, when you look at climate change, you know, you have these different models and you have these different CO2 emission scenarios. So we selected 6 to 8 of them. And so you simulate that for all these different models, and then you compare these different models, and that's what's shown over here. So in fact, what we found was that climate change, you know, of course it's not that simple. There are many factors coming into play, but if we if we're looking at all these different factors, and again, I can't mention what we all included over here, is you see that in general, we see a downward trend of soil salinity, which is kind of like maybe counterintuitive. But mostly that is with climate change, both basically meaning temperature increase and less water supply, is that farmers will go back, as they did in the droughts, going to pump more groundwater. And that will drive the gradient downward, and so we will have the water tables going down and less capillary rise. So that's one of the main features that came out of most of what we found. Also, what is counterintuitive, and then I conclude, is that we all expect that as temperature increase, that crop water requirements are going to increase. And most of you would agree with that, but however, there's also a CO2 effect, which of course is the reason why the temperature increase. See, the atmospheric CO2 actually is going to counteract that. So that's one thing. But what we have mostly found was, and again, when you come to think of it, it makes sense, growing seasons are going to be a bit shorter when temperature increases. So most crops that are grown in the valley actually have shorter growing seasons, and therefore the total water requirements will be less, unless the cropping seasons become so short that farmers start increasing the number of crops, right? This, of course, makes sense, because it depends on what they will do. But if you use the pattern of the crops that they use right now, you will actually see a decrease in crop water requirements on an annual basis. So what we found in the end is that in terms of salinity, you'll find a decrease in salt-affected soils, you know, if you believe those climate change scenarios. But of course, the leaching of the salt in the groundwater is going to continue. All right, I want to conclude here. Thanks, Steve.
Was the main variable that you changed for the climate change scenario, was that supplies or the delta?
No. So the main... Okay,
what
let
was
me,
the main variable that you changed for the climate change scenario?
Yeah, see, so I couldn't... Basically, in terms of climate change, looking at temperature, precipitation, you know, all the other atmospheric variables to actually simulate or predict evapotranspiration. Looking at water supply scenarios that have recently been put forward in terms of how much water will be available, you know, to the region. We're looking at